VGMP.
This summer, it's time for the most epic battle in podcast history. From VGMP, Jamie and Rory will go 2-on-1 with Raging Ball himself as they review the awful Blood Rain.
Blood Rain!
Starring Kristanna Loken, Udo Kier, Ben Kingsley, a bunch of other people nobody could possibly give a shit about. Oh, that's right, a guy whose only contribution to pop culture was he did a dance in
Reservoir Dogs.
It's time to talk Blood Rain. Blood Rain, ladies and gentlemen, based on the popular, I think,
beat-em-up
games on the PlayStation 2.
Xbox, original Xbox.
Were they on Xbox as well?
Yeah.
All right, I thought these were PlayStation exclusives for some reason.
Yeah, no, I don't know if they ever made it to GameCube. They were too late for Dreamcast. So, I know Blood Rain 2 was definitely on Xbox because it's backwards compatible.
Okay.
But I don't know if the first one ever made it to that. That one might have been a PS2 exclusive. Either way, I don't know how accurate you can believe that this is to the games, bearing in mind
true
the man spearheading the project.
True, true. So, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to VGMP, the video game movie podcast, hosted, as always, by myself, Jamie Evans, and my colleague, Rory Jocelyn. And this is our first Uwe Boll film in a little while. We like to spread them out a bit because, let's face it, we would kill ourselves if we had to watch them all in one go. First of all, let's start with our experience, if any, of the games upon which this movie is based. Have you ever played Blood Rain, Rory?
I've played a little of Blood Rain 2. I wanted to play more, but unfortunately, as much as I wanted to, and I was the right age and the right demographic for it, because I loved the goth and grunge thing. I was a grunger back in the day in the early 2000s. I never ended up getting Blood Rain when it was current. I got the backwards compatible version on the Xbox One, and I tried to play it. It seems okay. It's very dated. The way that the controls and everything are hard to get into nowadays. I have a feeling that if I'd played it back in the day, it wouldn't feel quite so janky now.
Yeah.
Because I'd have had some predisposition to its control scheme.
Yeah, we were used to games controlling like that back then.
Yeah, because it's a little bit more tankish than what you'd expect from a modern game. Modern game, you just move the stick and she'd go wherever the hell you want. It's not quite as straightforward as that. I think number two was a bit more free roam than what you described to me earlier from the first one. But it's still not great. But yeah, so I found it okay. I never completed it, though.
No.
And I do know that from playing that game and having I've seen the sequel to this film before, that the sequel definitely is nothing to do with the second game.
So have you seen the sequel but not this one?
Yes.
I hate you.
I'll tell you why. Back when Blu-ray was brand new in like 2008.
If the next words out of your mouth is the first Blu-ray I ever bought was Blood Rain 2.
No.
This show is over.
No, it wasn't. But at the time I was looking for cheap Blu-rays. And it just so happened HMV was still open in town where it's now a burger bar that's now also shut down. I remember looking through the Blu-ray section of that. And all the Blu-rays at the time, because it was brand new technology, were like 25 quid new. Except for Blood Rain, which was £8. And I was like, well, that's nice and cheap. I'll buy that. And I remember watching it and still feeling ripped off.
You were ripped off.
I was categorically ripped off for £8 for Blood Rain 2 when Blu-ray was brand spanking new.
I would feel ripped off if I paid 50p for this at CEX.
I mean, this is a better film than the second one. I can say that off the bat.
Right. That seems hard to believe, but I guess I'll wait and see.
You'll find out. I didn't notice any accidental racist moments in this one.
Is it Uwe Boll again, the second one?
Oh, yes.
Did he do all three?
He did all the trilogy.
He did all three.
Yeah.
So much like yourself, I did not play Blood Rain when it was new. I always wanted to, but I never did. And then I recently played it on a PS2 redacted and found that the control scheme, I just could not get into it. Much exactly how you said, like, if I'd have played it back then, I feel like I would have adapted to it just fine because loads of games controlled that way back then.
They hadn't quite mastered 3D controls at the end of 2000s.
But I was just finding it so... I didn't even play past the tutorial level, put it that way.
Right.
I was just finding it so incredibly janky to play. And I was just like, I'm not having fun doing this.
I mean, the style of the games is very of their time as well. Mm. If you release them as is now, maybe with a slight graphical polish, I still don't think people would gravitate to them the way they did back then.
No.
Because the whole, I mean, this is just before the emo phase kicked off, but not too far before. So we had the nu metal phase, went into more of the goth phase following grunge, and then that slid into the sort of vampire craze that moved into emo. Mm. So it was right in the sort of epicenter of that sort of more gothic movement.
This was around the time Evanescence were topping the charts.
Yes, yeah, or just after, actually.
Wake me up inside. Yeah. Well, no, the game would have been around the same time.
The game would have been, yeah. I think 2003 the first game was or something.
Yeah, that's the same year Bring Me to Life came out.
Right, there you go.
Bring me to life.
Wake me up.
Wake me up inside.
Can't wake up.
We were going to get copyright stricken for that.
Save it.
I think Evanescence are quite litigious. So.
Are they?
I don't fucking know. How would I know?
Sue me up inside.
Don't say that.
Sue me up and litigious.
Okay, stop it. Now you're just beating the joke to death. I will give you a Michael Madsen look. And the audience won't know what that joke means until we get to it, but it'll be one of those
that's
jokes
foreshadowing.
That plays back.
Well done. We're doing it. To be fair, that's more of a narrative than there was in this whole film.
Yeah, that's true. So there you go. Unfortunately, neither of us are that experienced. I tell you what I've always imagined the games would play like is I always imagined that they'd be a little bit similar in aesthetics to a game I did have on PS2 that I have completed twice despite its incredibly janky controls, which is Legacy of Kain Blood Omen 2.
Oh, interesting. I've only ever played a demo of the first one on the Dreamcast.
Right, what, the first...
Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver.
You did Soul Reaver.
Is that not the first? I don't
no,
really know much
so
about that series.
Legacy of Kain's interesting in that it's kind of a bit like the MCU,
right,
where it's two different series that then unite into an Avengers-style spin-off.
Interesting.
So the first game is Blood Omen, which came out in, like, 1994 or something.
Right.
So it's called Blood Omen Legacy of Kain. Then they did Soul Reaver Legacy of Kain, Blood Omen 2 Legacy of Kain, Soul Reaver 2 Legacy of Kain, and then Legacy of Kain Defiance.
Right.
And the gimmick being that in the Soul Reaver games you play as Azrael,
yes,
and in the Blood Omen games you play as Kain himself, and
right,
they're mortal enemies. And it's quite a cool idea because you're getting the same conflict from the different sides of the
conflict.
Yeah, yeah. And then they sort of, in the final story, kind of have to work together but still don't really like each other sort of thing. And it's one of those things where, sadly, I don't think the franchise ever sold amazingly well. It kind of just sold all right.
Yeah.
And then after Defiance came out, the guy who is the voice of Kain died, I think.
Oh, damn.
And Crystal Dynamics were kind of just like, hey, let's go ruin Tomb Raider. So this film, if you can call it a film...
It's definitely a film.
And not a home video filmed in Uwe Boll's back garden.
Okay. can I throw a caveat in before we start?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so common practice to slag off Uwe Boll. And I'm gonna give you a spoiler. We're not gonna be any different on that fact. But to try and be nice, because we are trying to be nicer on VGMP mm-hmm. at the moment. We're very easy to sour.
This is the wrong film to start trying to be nice on.
It doesn't help, but...
We've really stacked the deck against ourselves.
But, to be fair to him, what it looks like, and this isn't really fair to him because it suggests that while he may not be a great director, he's probably even worse a producer, so it's not really helping him. It seems like he got a relatively good budget for this film, but he spent it all on AAA cast, or as close as he could get to AAA cast. Now, that's not to say they give AAA performances in this film, but we will get to that. But it looks like he's basically spent all his money on AAA cast and had almost nothing left for props cast, for props costume and location. So a lot
possibly
of it comes across a bit cheap.
Possibly, although I'd argue, actually, thinking about it, when you're saying AAA cast or A-list, it's A-list in film, isn't it?
Yeah. They're probably B-list more than A-list.
Your only one is Ben Kingsley, really.
So, Christina Loken was on a rise at this point because this is only 2 years after Terminator 3.
Yeah, I think people had already... I think she'd peaked. She was on the downslide.
I don't know. I think she's... As far as I'm aware, she still had some...
Cachet
at this point.
But Michael Madsen is way past his prime at this point.
I don't know, because he had just appeared in the Kill Bill duet. duology, sorry.
So is he in those ones?
He's the cowboy in the Kill Bill duology. I know you and I don't really rate Kill Bill.
I don't remember him in it.
Yeah, he's in both. He's a bit like this. He's
is he one of the bad guys?
He is, yeah. He's kind of one of the weakest bad guys.
Yeah.
He's a bit like this. It's almost like he's kind of doesn't care.
Yeah.
Almost, it's basically what you feel from it. But either way, like, let's be honest, Michael Madsen actually peaked in Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
That was his peak.
I said Pulp Fiction earlier, and I meant Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
Reservoir Dogs is what he's in.
Yeah, and he's great in Reservoir Dogs. But yeah, you've also got, there's a cavalcade of other actors, though. Like, so let's say this. Michael Paré is in it momentarily. He was definitely on a downswing because he kind of peaked in the 80s, and even then it wasn't really a high peak.
Yeah.
You've got Billy Zane, who had already peaked.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's on the downslide by this point.
God, they were all still known names, though.
Mm.
The only one who's not, the only main character that's not a known name is Will Sanderson, who we have seen before on this show. He was in House of the Dead, which was also another Uwe Boll film, from which we reviewed in season 3.
Mm.
He in that one, he was the one with the worst line, which is, "We're about to do the humpity bumpity, baby, and the humpity bumpity."
Velcro, beautiful Velcro. Oh, we are going to do the humpity bumpity.
Come on, baby.
Humpity bumpity.
Now, he's back in this playing a more serious role, and he's literally the only one trying his best.
Yeah.
Like, he is acting as, like, I mean, he's not a phenomenal actor, but he's at least believable in this. And he's doing his best, and you can see it's like, dude, you are trying to act as best as you can against a whole range of brick walls.
Yeah.
He's getting nothing back from the rest of the cast. That's why I think that most of the budget went on the cast, because the cast is mostly known names.
To try and sum up the plot, then, you basically have a trio...
There's a plot?
Well, as best as I could understand it,
yeah.
You basically have a trio of vampire hunters from a community called Brimstone, led by Michael Madsen, whose character is called Vladimir.
Yep.
And teaming up with him...
He doesn't cover his accent at all.
No.
He is still, New York, is he, Michael Madsen?
I think so.
He's still Michael Madsen.
Yeah.
So I am Vladimir.
Even that was too close to an actual Vladimir voice.
There's no actual acting going on here. He is joined by a forgettable generic white guy and Michelle Rodriguez.
That forgettable white guy is a character called Sebastian.
Sebastian, that was it.
And he's played by Matthew Davis, or is he credited in this, Matt Davis.
Right.
He's not done a huge amount of other work.
No.
Outside of, let me have a look. Let's be a bit more fair. He was in Legally Blonde. He played a character called Warner. I don't know how big that is because I've never seen that film. He was in a film called Blue Crush, which I remember coming out because it was sexy chicks on a beach in
Keys. Yes, I remember Blue Crush coming out.
But I never watched it, so that's bad on my part. He's in a film called Tigerland. He's been in Christmas Wishes and Mistletoe Kisses, which is one of those Hallmark Christmas movies. And then he's been in a few TV series like The Vampire Diaries and CSI.
Mm.
In fact, in The Vampire Diaries, he was in it between 2009 and 2017. So either he was a recurring or he was a regular.
Right.
But yeah, so he's done quite a bit.
Yeah.
But he's never been A-list level.
Anyway, so they've also got Michelle Rodriguez in their team. And they go to some party, I guess it is, and talk to this bartender who, and they're like, "What kind of lead have you got for us?" And then they murk a vampire in one of the only potentially decent moments in the entire film, where they're standing at the bar and this guy comes up to them and asks for absinthe, and there's a little mirror on the bar, and the guy turns it and notices that this other guy doesn't have a reflection, so he just stabs him in the chest with a stake, and the guy crumbles, as vampires do when you stake them. Anyway, the bartender guy is like, "Hey, here's this flyer for a carnival." We cut to the carnival, where we're introduced to Rain herself, played by Christina Loken, and we think she's a vampire at first, because she drinks blood, which causes her to heal. She's allergic to holy water. But then they hang a crucifix on her neck, and it doesn't burn her.
Yeah.
So we're like, ah, what is she then? And to save you waiting till we get there, she is a Damphyr, which is what they would call in Blade a Daywalker.
Right.
She's got all the powers of a vampire, but none of the weaknesses of a vampire. She escapes, and basically, obviously, these two storylines are going to eventually converge.
You say none of the weaknesses. I don't think she can go out in the sun still. Because at the bit when they get to Meatloaf...
Good point.
When they...
She covers herself up
when the sunlight comes in, so I'm guessing she's...
You are correct.
Still... Yeah.
Yeah, you are correct.
Though, don't they arrive at night? Either way. No, yeah. We'll get... Yeah, yeah, actually, I just realised that's a plot hole. Never mind.
Our third player in the game is a character called Kagan.
Kagan.
Who is played by Oscar-winning actor Sir Ben Kingsley.
Yes. Now, I've seen Ben Kingsley in stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very good actor when he tries.
Mm.
He did not give a fuck on this film.
I have never seen such a bad Ben Kingsley performance.
Honestly,
ever.
If this had been the only thing I'd have watched Ben Kingsley in, I would assume he's literally the worst actor who ever lived.
Yeah. This is atrocious.
Honestly.
I'm convinced, and I mean this, I am convinced he's reading his lines off of a cue card that's hidden just off camera, because 90% of his dialogue is not delivered to another character.
No.
It's just him staring off past the camera.
Looking at a cue card.
I'm convinced people are holding cue cards, and he's reading them. He's doing that thing where sometimes when you're reading stuff off, you don't perform it, you just list it.
Yeah.
And his dialogue sounds like he is just listing things. Like, there's literally a bit, I'm not joking, where he's got a line that is something like, well, then you'll go to such and such and you'll pick her up, and if she doesn't do that, then you'll kill her. And if you kill her, then you'll go and get me the thingy.
The time has come to fulfill your oaths, my loyal thralls. Scour the land, find brimstone and destroy it. Bring the Damphyr to me. Leave no human alive that crosses you. The promise of eternal life awaits those who succeed. Those who fail will find only death.
Yeah, and he's literally doing that. He does not give a shit. There is no performance in Ben Kingsley's... Yeah. I don't even call it a performance.
Yeah, which I've never seen. I've never seen him be like this.
No.
Ever.
It makes you think that, like, here's the problem. As I said, Will Sanderson, bless him, is doing his level best against a cavalcade of much better known actors. Mm. And yet, like, he even has a scene with Sir Ben Kingsley. He's the better actor in the scene.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that overall, Sir Ben Kingsley is the better actor of the two. In this film, he is not. And you're just sitting there going, like, I feel so sorry for the poor bugger, because he's obviously gone, right, now I've got a proper full part. I'm in a film full of celebrities. This is my chance to sort of shine and be seen as, you know, on level pegging with these guys. And none of them gave him the time, or anyone the time of day. Which leads me to believe that, obviously, Will Sanderson himself had something to prove on this film, which is, I deserve a bigger part as these big celebrities.
Yeah.
The others... as you say, were either on a downswing or it was just a paycheck, in which case they didn't have anything to prove.
No, because as well as Ben Kingsley, other actors who are blatantly here just for the paycheck are Michael Madsen and Billy Zane.
Three scenes.
Again, most of which are delivered with him not actually talking to another character.
He doesn't care.
And he's not acting.
He's not in the room.
He's just reading the lines.
Yeah.
Undermine freedom and humanity. And together we will stop this madness and bring peace to these lands, your beloved father, etc., etc.
Don't get me wrong, this film is garbage. But if you've taken the job, put the effort in.
Yeah, the downside is he never has a scene with Sir Ben Kingsley. And that would have been a hilarious scene to watch. Just who can act the least out of these two great actors?
Time would have stood still.
It would have been fucking great.
It also would have been the greatest scene in history for bad wigs, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, those two, it should have been a scene with those two and Michael Madsen. Who can act the least?
Yeah.
And the thing is, the only thing I can think of is, like, actors take roles that are, quite frankly, beneath them, or they feel are beneath them, all the time. It's not new. Like, we saw Eric Roberts in DOA Dead or Alive, for example. But he wasn't delivering flat like these guys are. I think what it is there must be something happening on set that is, like, you just get this vibe that no one's enjoying themselves, with one exception, which is Meatloaf. Meatloaf is enjoying himself.
No, I've got trivia later. Apparently Meatloaf was miserable on this film.
Then at least he was trying to perform then. Like, that's insane. I thought he was enjoying himself.
Apparently he felt incredibly uncomfortable. Because, okay, spoiler alert, this is a little bit of trivia now. Meatloaf has one scene where he's in a room full of naked women.
Mm.
Those women are not actresses. They are actual prostitutes that Uwe Boll bought because prostitutes are cheaper than actresses.
Fuck.
Yep. Apparently, Meatloaf was incredibly uncomfortable. Sadly, I'm not even going to dispute that story. No. That's just printed on the internet, because it sounds like exactly the sort of thing Raging Bull would do.
Yeah.
If you told me, like, Spielberg had done it, I'd be like, no, that's a rumour.
But that's, no, it's Uwe Boll.
Yeah. I'm just like, yeah, I bet he did.
I bet that he's a classless hack, and I'm like, that is something a classless hack would do.
Yeah.
It does seem like no one wanted to be on the set, and anyone who was on the set couldn't wait to leave.
Yeah, well, we'll get to it later, but I've also got some trivia relating to the production about how Uwe might not have treated certain people in the crew very well, but we'll get there a bit later.
He doesn't help himself, does he? Like, I know that there is this, online there is this backlash against the hate for Uwe Boll, where people will sit there and go, these people just don't understand what he's trying to do, you know, they're just slagging him off because it's popular to slag him off, which is actually a line that he himself believes as well.
Yeah.
But when you hear about how shit he treats people, as well as not producing a quality movie at the same time, you're like, for example, Casino Royale's director is known to be really difficult to work with.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily personable a lot of the time, but some of his films, the results speak for themselves, Casino Royale being one of them, GoldenEye being the other. He did both of those films. And those are kind of the two best films by those two Bonds, arguably. I'm sure there'll be people with alternate opinions.
It's definitely the best of the Brosnan ones. I haven't seen all the Daniel Craig ones.
Sure.
But GoldenEye is definitely the best of the Pierce Brosnan ones.
Yeah, and they're both the same director, and the results speak for themselves. So even if the director's not overly personable, he gets results.
Yeah.
To not be personable and not get results?
Yeah.
Just, it's like, why are you even in this industry, man? Like,
well, because he found a loophole he could exploit, that's why.
Yeah.
Fair play. Like, if you're someone who watches this film and enjoys it, that's great. In fact, I envy you. Because when we sat down to watch this, I kind of went in with a positive attitude where I was like, well, I know I'm not going to get gold, but, you know, hopefully I'm going to get sexy vampires having kick-ass fight scenes with other people, and it'll be fun.
Sexy vampires we got, I feel. I like the look of Christina Loken in this film. What I'm saying is, you get sexy women in this film. What you don't get is that huge amount of joy, because no one's putting the effort in.
Like, no one's putting the effort in. The fight scenes are both choreographed and shot terribly.
Yeah.
You can tell that he is covering up the weakness in the choreography a lot of the time by having this weird effect where things go blurry, like there's a motion blur.
Yeah, and there's times where the camera, is the frame rate goes a bit like janky, but that's done on purpose in post to try and make it feel more epic.
Yeah,
they did that a little bit in the 2000s in cheap productions, and it never works.
And no one is more guilty of having bad choreography than Michael Madsen.
No.
That man did not do a single day of sword training.
He doesn't know how to hold the damn thing.
You should see how he's holding this sword. Like, honestly, it's really selling the fact that the swords are obviously fake.
Mm.
There's clearly no weight to them, because he is just throwing it from hand to hand.
Yeah.
Like it's a little stick.
Yeah, I think they're probably foam or something like that. Because they're not even like a soft metal or something like that. They're clearly something there. If he whacked someone hard with it, it probably wouldn't do much damage.
It'd probably break.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just the way where, like, there's a bit where, like, they're storming a castle. And at least Sebastian and Michelle Rodriguez and Rain herself, you know, at least they go in and they look like they're storming a castle.
Yeah.
Michael Madsen strolls in like he's down the fucking market on a Sunday morning to buy some fresh tomatoes or something like that.
Man, like, there's no performance from Michael Madsen at any level.
No.
There's just... Oh, no, I'll save the worst of Michael Madsen to the end, because that's a big thing. I know you want to go on to that, because it's so funny.
But basically, Kagan is Ben Kingsley. Yep. He's supposedly the most powerful vampire in the realm, although when we actually fight him, he's a pushover. And he is the father of Rain.
Yeah.
Although I'm not entirely sure about that now.
Well, it's kind of weird because the way the story starts, and I'm not sure if this is... Because I know you've got some trivia about the script, so it might be to do with the script changes. But at the beginning of the film, as it's presented, Rain is basically told, or knows, that she is the daughter of Kagan. Mm. But she's the daughter of Kagan having raped her mother, yeah, and then killed her mother.
Her mum's human, which is why she's a damn fear.
Yeah, so it's, you know, one of them rare things where a vampire has sex with a human and it actually creates a baby. She recalls that rape... And at first we were like, well, how would she have seen it? Like, it's like she's seeing it firsthand, but she wasn't there. She was being conceived. And then later in the film, we see that when Kagan was raping her mother,
she was
already a kid hiding in a cupboard watching, which is how... And I'm like, okay, that explains the memory. But what it doesn't explain is, did he have sex with her before then? Because at no point does Kagan have any other interaction with Rain until the ending. So how is she now a Damphir? That doesn't make sense. Yeah.
He's got some sort of evil plan that I won't lie, we only finished this film 20 minutes ago and I've forgotten it already.
Allow me to elaborate.
Where he's collecting body parts.
Yeah, there's body parts of like the original vampire hidden in boxes, and basically they cut the body up and moved it across like each body part into a different location. And it's basically a MacGuffin because it never goes anywhere.
Don't even know well-organized MacGuffin, though, because...
They only find three parts. Well, I think the eye she absorbs, yeah, there's a finger that she fights Michelle Rodriguez for. Was there a third?
Was there a bit of bone, like a rib bone?
There was a bit of bone. I don't remember where they found it. But yeah, so there's three bits that they find of this original
vampire.
They're
not really spread across the land, are they? They're all sort of within a 10-minute radius of where Brimstone is.
Yeah, so the whole story for, and you know what, it didn't need to be there.
But what was his motive for collecting the three? Like, that's what
the
I can't
remember.
Was
it, so the idea in the film was that if he collects all the parts and assumedly absorbs them into himself, I don't know, whoever collects all the parts, if you're a vampire, becomes super powerful as a vampire. You become Goku and Super Saiyan Kagan. Can you imagine that? That'd be great.
Super Saiyan.
Oh, what did I say?
Cyan.
That's a lovely colour.
Like the colour cyan.
Yeah, it's my hair. Anyway.
But it's Saiyan.
Super Saiyan's better. Anyway, if you collect all the body parts, you get superpowers as a vampire and become the top dog vampire who can never be defeated. Or super hard to defeat. But that's what Kagan's already meant to be anyway.
I'm going to say, he's meant to be the most powerful AOA, whatever.
Yeah.
So I want to just continuing to talk about the things that make the film feel cheap.
Yeah.
Now remember, we're not against low-budget movies, but this clearly is not low-budget. But it feels cheap, and that part of that reason is that the costume budget, I don't know where it went, but these costumes... Rain spends the entire first half of the film...
Three quarters,
in what looks like a bad spandex 90s wrestling outfit.
No, I think it's fabric. It's a maybe a spandex
fabric
blend.
But it looks
blend.
Like spandex.
Yeah. It's because it's almost like... You know what it looks like? It looks like a Blood Rain cosplay...
Yeah.
...that's made to look like leather but isn't leather.
Yeah.
Which... They then switch at the end of the film to her in a leather version of the exact same outfit.
Same pattern.
Everyone's like, whoa, like you've changed your costume. It looks amazing. It's like, that would have landed better if you were going to do that moment by not making it literally the identical pattern.
Yeah, have her being something else for the first half.
Yeah, something a bit more normal.
But that is not nearly as egregious. Not nearly as egregious as the... awful wigs in this movie.
Oh my god.
Like, they
ben
are
Kingsley's
all... Ben Kingsley's wig is not even glued to his head properly. There's about a fucking inch of space between the line of the wig and the skin of his scalp.
I kind of expected, when I first saw it and you slagged it off, no, give it a second, because, like, films of this era or people of this era, when they were bald, they would wear wigs. It's where the whole in the UK judges wear.
I was going to say, you thought it was like a barrister wig situation.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, back then they did. When they went bald, they wore a wig because there was some distinguishingness to having having hair. And so there was a lot of bad false wigs. It doesn't come up as that. It never moves. It never gets ripped off him, despite all the fight scenes he has at the end. The wig never slips. So presumably that and all the other bad wigs are all meant to be their legitimate hair.
The others definitely are.
Yeah.
Michael Madsen's is probably the best.
It still doesn't suit him.
But it's still not great. Because his looks less like a wig, perhaps, and more like they've put extensions in his natural hair.
Yeah.
But Meatloaf's, my God. Right, I'm telling you now, that is actually taken from a Bon Jovi cosplay outfit.
Might have been a Meatloaf outfit.
No, because he was never blonde.
Oh, okay.
They've taken... That is a Bon Jovi cosplay wig from when he did Living on a Prayer.
Yeah.
And they've just stuck it on Meatloaf. And Billy Zane literally just, like, killed a cat and skinned it on the set and just stuck it on his head. I'm pretty sure it changes colour in between the scenes he does.
It doesn't change colour, but the whole cut changes.
The cut changes, and it changes position on his head.
It does, yeah.
Because in his first scene, it's much lower, like it loops down round his ear and down his neck. And then in his next scene, it's much higher on his head.
Which makes me wonder if there were reshoots for this, but I can't imagine they had the budget for reshoots. Mate,
they had Billy's, I'm telling you now.
Actually,
they had...
no, Billy Zane doesn't share a scene with anyone else, no, apart from Will Sanderson, who was the one who was not already
I'm telling you now, Billy
he was
Zane
adding in later.
Had one day, and he came in and he went, you're only getting me for this day. You either shoot everything now, and I'm giving you at most two takes of everything.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And I'm not going to put any effort into any of them.
I think he may have still been married to Kelly Brook at this time. So he was like, I am going home. I think he was still married to Kelly Brook around this time, I think. The wig situation is hilarious.
Oh, the wigs are the worst thing I've seen.
I'm very grateful that at least Christina Loken has just dyed her hair.
Yeah.
Because there is a version of this where they'd have just done her in a wig as well, and it would have been awful.
Yeah. I will hand it to Christina Loken. I actually think she does a pretty good job in this. She's not a phenomenal actress. She never has been. But she's trying her best as well, to be fair. And she's actually doing an effective British accent. So, she is putting the effort in with, she's basically performing at the best of her more limited abilities.
Yeah. She can't do any of the emotional scenes. That's her problem. She's perfectly believable in the scenes where Rain is kicking ass and being a badass. I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
But when she's... I'm not going to lie, and trigger warning for anyone for this sort of thing. The line at the end when she's having the final confrontation with Ben Kingsley... And she does this, what's supposed to be this really emotional, hard-hitting line, where she's like, you raped my mum, and now you're going to die, or something like that.
Yeah.
I nearly laughed. Because the way she says it is so... It should have that emotion, like, you raped my mum.
But it's almost that throwaway,
she almost says it just like she said, oh, the sky's blue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you raped my mum.
Have you not always longed for freedom, Rain?
You condemned me the day you raped my mother.
Yeah, well, now you're going to die, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's like...
And you're like, no.
I'm going to give Christina Loken some defence.
She's acting against a block of wood.
She's acting against a block of wood, a man who does not give a solitary fuck. Mm. But number two, the backup to the solitary block of wood is your director.
Yeah.
And look who the director was.
Yeah, I know.
This is a man who couldn't direct his way out of a paper bag. Mm. And he's trying to tackle, let's be honest, rape is a dark subject matter. You have to handle it sensitively. That's not something that is in the wheelhouse of Uffe Boll.
Or in a film called Blood Rain, to be fair.
But even so, you could still handle the subject matter seriously. The thing is, Uwe Boll has never, to my knowledge, but I've seen about six of his films now, in none of his films has he ever managed to hit an emotional angle.
No, never.
And the problem is if you're going to introduce something that dark into your story, the director needs to be able to cope with that.
Postal was the premier example of that. There's loads of themes in Postal that should be heavy.
Yeah.
And they are handled with the subtlety of a 13-year-old edgelord.
Yeah, that being said, I will I'm going to give him an out on that. Postal wasn't supposed to be hard-hitting or emotional.
They don't put...
Uwe Boll, as you say, he's an edgelord, so that's that was the whole point of Postal. With something like this, though, it's more of a proper narrative, or it should be, as is something like Alone in the Dark, or as is something like House of the Dead, as is, like, you know, these are meant to be actual films.
Yeah.
And he still can't hit the basics of emotional storytelling.
So he tries to crowbar in a relationship between Rain and Sebastian, which has no foundation, absolutely no build up to it. There's a scene about halfway through where she decides she's warm for his form and stops him. And don't get me wrong, that was actually kind of a cool scene.
That was hot.
Like, but the way she's clinging to the jail cell door and stuff.
The thing is that he does this a lot. Alone in the Dark also opens up with a male and female character talking on the phone, there being no chemistry whatsoever. She then returns to his house or where he lives and just fucks him.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, what?
Yeah. Like, so they have this sex scene. They go about business as usual for the rest of the film. And then in the final battle, he gets shanked and dies, and you get this whole bit where she's like, no, you can't leave me, don't die, and you're like, what will I do without you? And you're like, you literally, this man means nothing to you.
Yeah,
like, you literally had a random hookup with him because you were horny.
You fucked him in a jail. That's
like, yeah,
that's not the romance plot you think it is.
Yeah, and there's no chemistry or heat between them.
Though I will say this, so we're talking about the dodgy cinematography and dodgy choreography.
Mm.
There's a bit as they enter the final fight where Rain is about to get killed or sliced open by Ben Kingsley, and Michael Madsen and Sebastian both jump in from the top floor down to the bottom floor. And it looks like, because the angles, again, this is something where it's called bad direction, Uwe. When you have two characters in a certain position, so in this case, you had Sebastian on the left, Michael Madsen on the right. The reason you don't move the camera to a 180 degree angle facing the other way is now that Michael Madsen is on the left, and you've got what looks like Michael Madsen on the left, and then Sebastian on the right.
It was a flip position,
yeah. Yeah, so where they flip positions, Sebastian does this... It still doesn't make sense. He does a Sonic the Hedgehog forward double roll jump from the top balcony to the bottom. But you think it's Michael Madsen, which makes you wet yourself, because Michael Madsen literally, he's like a walking tree trunk. Groot has more movability than Michael Madsen in this film. And yet suddenly he's doing this double forward flip. But it turns out he's Errol Flynning it down a curtain.
Yes.
Which is... less stupid, but is just as stupid, because honestly, why is no one putting any effort?
And then they even do stuff like, there's a bit in that final fight where Rain literally sticks her swords in the sides of Ben Kingsley and literally scrapes them along his sides.
Yep.
And then you get a shot of him standing, and there's no blood, there's no rips in the costume.
Yeah, he staggers back to have no damage, no visible...
Yeah, the costume looks cheap as hell. Oh. But my favourite thing in that whole scene is when he kills Michael Madsen.
Yeah.
Michael Madsen, his arms are being held by two henchmen.
Yep.
And Ben Kingsley walks up to him, casual as anything. And
no
just
resistance or anything.
Just sinks this knife between his ribs.
No, it's a sword. It goes
sword,
all the way,
sorry.
It goes all the way through him.
Sinks this sword between his ribs. And guys...
goes out the back of him, doesn't it?
Yeah, and honestly, you need to go look this scene up. Because when I tell you that Michael Madsen looks at him with the most casual look in the world, it's literally like...
It's like he's annoyed more than anything.
It's like a mixture of, thank God my time on this film is over. And I can go and continue drinking.
Yeah.
There's a bit of regret in there.
Yeah.
You can kind of read the, fuck, I used to work with Tarantino.
Yeah.
Now I'm working with Uwe Boll.
Yeah.
It just...
It looks more like he's looking at Ben Kingsley going, I thought you'd be acting. Oh.
It's how I look at you when you won't stop making puns. Just a mixture of heartbreak... and utter fed-upness with the world. Just apathy.
Does it make you feel mad, son? Yeah, that's the look. That is the look. I grant you that. That is the look.
Yeah. It's hilarious, but unintentionally so.
Yeah.
The only other thing I think I've got to say, really, about why the film looks so cheap, and we both noticed this. We were watching it, and, you know, we're still early in the film, and we're kind of watching it going, is it just me, or does this look really cheap? Yeah, it does, but I can't quite work out why. And then it just sort of hit us. The lighting.
Yeah.
Is awful.
It looks like daytime TV.
It does. It's that sort of really flat studio lighting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where they haven't actually taken into account what the light sources within the scene are.
No.
So there's plenty of scenes. Yeah, realistically, there's no electricity in this world.
No, there's just candlelight.
Everything's lit by torches and candlelight and bonfires and things like that. There's literally bits where they're in like a dark room lit by a single candle, right? Now, I'm not saying I want the scene to be pitch black. I obviously want to be able to see what's happening. But give me some interesting shadow play.
Yeah, there's no shadows in this at all.
Because that enhances your drama.
Yeah.
But instead, it's all just this flat, quite frankly, porno-style lighting.
Yeah.
Where it's literally just a flat wash.
Yeah, it's what I imagine you'd get from Xena Warrior Princess.
Mm.
If they did a gothic episode or something. It's what this exactly what this looks like. The other thing that actually it looks like, which Christina Loken was also in, it looks very similar, but actually annoying. It looks less high budget, and that's an insult, than Mortal Kombat Conquest, which is a TV series of Mortal Kombat that's meant to be a prequel to the 1995 film. The difference with that is while Mortal Kombat Conquest looks terrible, the same as this does, they actually use different coloured lighting, so it's actually usually a little bit more interesting to look at, even though it's fucking cheap.
Mm.
This looks cheap, but it doesn't even have colour.
Yeah.
So you're just sort of like, oh, this is boring as shit. Like, why does it look like a TV set? I don't understand.
It's very strange. It's Uwe Boll has a quality to his film.
He is Ed Wood, let's be honest.
No. Actually, that's interesting you've said that. Towards the end of the show, I'm going to read a review that is listing all the reasons why it is an insult to Ed Wood.
Right.
To say Uwe Boll is like Ed Wood. Basically boils down to the fact that Ed Wood may have not been good, but he clearly loved filmmaking.
Right.
Uwe Boll is a cynical hack.
Yeah. Okay, fair point.
Exploiting a tax loophole.
Yeah, fair point. I'll agree with that.
I just keep thinking about what must have been going through some of these actors' heads on set.
Well, and we know what was going through Ben Kingsley's head. He just had the fucking magic roundabout tune going through his head as he was acting.
I can just imagine Ben Kingsley, when you look at these shots of him just staring into the distance, and he's almost like he's frozen, and it's almost like in his head, you can imagine him being like, I was in Schindler's List. I won.
Was Ben Kingsley in Schindler's List?
Yes. He's the main Jewish person who works for Oscar Schindler.
He was.
Pretty sure he won an Oscar for it.
Yeah, he was in Gandhi as well.
And he's Gandhi, yes.
He was also in a really good British film called Sexy Beast.
Yes,
and
I've heard about that.
He's the best thing in it.
Mm.
And this is like, you watch that film and you see him. He's a character that swears constantly.
Mm.
Just effing and jeffing and saying the major C word, etc. all over the place.
Yeah.
Then he gets Ray Winston into this room. He goes, look, right, you need to do this. You need to do this. This is the job that you've been given, blah, 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 blah. And he's given him this mission and it's as aggressive as every other bit of dialogue. But what you don't notice until this is said is Ray Winston goes, yeah, but fuck me, man, you know I can't just do that. He goes, why are you swearing? I haven't been swearing this whole time. Why? Well, it gives you the right to start fucking swearing. And you're just like, oh shit, he's not been swearing. But you don't notice because the aggression and the power in every word that Ben Kingsley's been doing is the same as when he swears.
Mm.
So it kind of it's a really good bit of work where it shows you how swearing just becomes like a blanket neutral,
yeah,
and you're actually more listening to the tone of what someone is saying rather than the actual words individually. That's a brilliant piece of acting from Ben Kingsley.
I think Ben Kingsley needs to never do another video game film again, because he's done two of them now and they are both atrocious. You may recall he is also the villain in Disney's Prince of Persia.
I am aware of that. I just want to see if he's done more.
He better not have done.
See you after the break.
I'm trying to be nice because I want to leave the days behind where I'm like, this is an insult to cinema. But this is an insult to cinema.
It is.
No. This, honestly, other than the fact it's got famous actors in it, this is on par with some of the things I've seen at local film festivals.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. I don't know how he got the budget for this, but the budget is the... and all that budget, as I say, went on the cast. If it wasn't for the budget, this isn't even a... this is a terrible local film festival movie. This isn't even a good one.
The plot's nonsensical. Like, yeah. I'm not asking a film called Blood Rain to have the most sensical plot.
Yeah.
But this is nonsense.
Yeah.
This is utter... this is like fucking... I was going to try and make a funny pun about Sabrina Carpenter and the song Nonsense, but I can't think what it is. It's just nonsense, okay? It's garbage. Yeah.
I never thought I'd say this for Wes Anderson, but honestly, if anything, this film has just given me an appreciation for him. Because that man is a professional as fuck. The fact that he kept trying.
Are we going to assume that the anachronistic haircut was Uwe Boll's idea then?
Well, I mean, to be honest, he was probably just going, look, if it's that or the wig, give me the shit haircut. Yeah. Which I wouldn't blame him for.
Are you ready for a spot of trivia about the making of this film, Lorsham?
Please. So before you do your trivia, Will Sanderson has been in 4 video game adaptations.
And how many of them are Uwe Boll? All 4.
Yeah. House of the Dead in 2003.
Yeah.
I don't remember him in it, but when we get round to it, he was in Alone in the Dark.
Right.
He was in Blood Rain, obviously. Oh, and he's also in The Name of the King, which is Uwe Boll's best movie. So he's in those 4. He wasn't in Postal, though.
That was probably good for him.
Yeah, honestly, he probably read it and went, nah, man.
Okay, so here's some trivia for you that I think backs up your opinion that this probably wasn't the nicest working environment.
Okay.
So according to screenwriter Guinevere Turner, while she was writing the first draft of the script, she received an angry phone call from Uwe Boll, who swore at her and demanded she hand in a draft of the script. A week later, after she sent in the rough first draft of the script, she was shocked to learn that production was commencing immediately with that draft.
What?
Even though traditionally a first draft is always a rough draft that's improved upon subsequently. Later on, she was informed that Boll and the actors...
Did she delay writing, or did he not hire her until the last minute?
Given one of the later facts, I think he didn't hire her till last minute.
That makes more sense to me. That sounds very Uwe Boll.
Yeah. It was probably because we know he gets all his funding from tax loopholes.
Yeah.
It was probably that there was like a deadline where if he hadn't made the film within a certain amount of time...
he'd lose the rights.
Lose the money or lose the rights. Later on, she was informed that Boll and the actors had basically rewritten most of the script whilst shooting, and the finished movie barely resembled her script. Michael Madsen called the movie an abomination, a horrifying and preposterous movie, but said that he enjoyed working with director Uwe Boll and would work with him again if asked.
Madsen!
Probably because Uwe Boll didn't care that he was drunk on set every day.
Madsen, look, far be it from me to tell you your craft, but if you're enjoying your time, regardless of whether you think the movie's going to be shit or not, if you're actually enjoying yourself on set, for the love of Christ, put some effort in.
Yeah.
Like, if you enjoy the director, you enjoy the situation you're in, help the guy's career by actually... And here's another thing as well, another thing I'm going to say on the acting front. There have been, as we said before, there have been actors that have been cast in stuff, video game related or not, that is beneath them. Raul Julia as M. Bison in the first Street Fighter movie, I'm sorry, that film is beneath Raul Julia. Raul Julia is the MVP of that movie. Mm. That man put in so much effort. It wasn't like he was Shakespeare gold. It was hammy as hell. That man was chewing all the scenery. But it's the best, most memorable performance of the film. Madsen, if you liked the guy, why didn't you do that?
As I already said, the half-naked prostitutes in the scene with Leonid were real Romanian prostitutes.
Oh.
At the Stockholm International Film Festival, director Uwe Boll said it was because prostitutes were cheaper than hiring actresses.
That is a man... Honestly, that is a man with no moral line, yeah. Isn't it?
When asked in a 2007 interview with Time magazine why an actor of his career and reputation would accept a role in this movie, Sir Ben Kingsley replied, "To be honest, I've always wanted to play a vampire with the teeth and the long black cape. Let's just say my motives were somewhat immature for doing it." That dude thought he was going to get to, like, fuck or something, didn't he?
I don't know what he was expecting, because...
Maybe he just always, like he said, maybe we're overreading it. Maybe he just always thought, maybe he thought he'd be like Dracula or something.
Okay. Even if I give him that, who's going to give you that role, Ben? May I call you Ben? Who's going to give you that role, Ben Kingsley, when this is your only performance of it and it's the worst performance I've seen committed to film?
I think he'd signed the contract and then had second thoughts and tried to get out of it but couldn't for whatever reason.
Then again, Raul Julia...
Then he should still try, yeah. I know, I agree.
Again, Raul Julia was in a shitty film and fucking owned the film. Yeah.
According to Uwe Boll, Michael Madsen was frequently drunk throughout the production. Laura Bailey, the voice actress of Blood Rain in the game, hates the movie. It was Kristanna Loken's idea to cast Meatloaf as Leonid.
And again, he's the only one outside of him and Will Sanderson giving any form of performance.
Yeah. That is it for interesting trivia. Doesn't sound like it was a great production.
No.
Given the way the writer was supposedly treated. And I decided to have a... Because, you know... Right, she could be lying. So I decided to have a quick look at what else she's written to see if if everything else she's written is garbage, then probably she's lying. But she wrote American Psycho, which is a great movie.
Yeah, there's no way you go from... When was American Psycho? 2000.
Yeah.
She did the Notorious Betty Page as well. I've heard that's a good film.
Yeah.
I mean, she's written some stuff that is like I Am Fear or Crazy Bitches. Those are clearly not designed to be highbrow films. But at the same token, Hide the Sausage.
Has she got a film called Hide the Sausage?
She's got a film called Hide the Sausage. It's a short from 2015.
Where are we hiding it?
Eddie the Sausage Zambri gets released from prison after serving 8 years. He now has to stay out of sight, make amends, tie up loose ends, and then leave the country forever. She's in it as a character called Frisky.
I have got some other interesting facts that come from the reviews of the film. So I'm only going to read one of the reviews, but one of them's got some interesting facts in it that I'm just going to read you.
Sure.
Which is, this gentleman had the luxury of, when he saw the film, it was at a screening where Uwe Boll himself was in attendance.
Whee!
And he got up to say some stuff about filmmaking at the beginning.
What? I'm sorry, Uwe Boll knows nothing.
And this guy's takeaway was that everything Uwe said explains why his films are shit.
Okay.
First off, Uwe Boll has openly said at this event that he doesn't understand why people don't like his movies.
Okay.
So that's your first thing. If you're incapable of seeing the criticism, then it's like the alcoholic thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't get better until you admit you have a problem.
Yep.
He feels that the internet community give him a hard time because he's German and he makes his movies with Nazi money. His quote, not mine.
What?
Yeah.
That's the Nazi gold joke from Postal.
Yeah.
Was that a joke or is that him trying to basically out himself?
Maybe. He also said he couldn't care less if the actors he has are actually right for the roles. In fact, finding actors is the last thing he does to secure financing for his films. Apparently, he thinks if the story's strong enough to carry the...
story?
He thinks the story's strong enough to carry the film.
He didn't have a script for Blood Rain.
Yeah.
You said she turned in a script and they started like a week after he requested it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were already on set filming. How did he know who to cast and for what?
They weren't on set already. They filmed like a week later. He probably got the first people he could. I bet there was no auditions or anything.
That might explain why people like Billy Zane were on their own without being involved.
I bet Billy Zane happened to be at the same studio doing something else.
Yeah, and he went, hey, and do, you want extra, went oi. Do you want an extra few thousand, 100,000 for a day shoot? He's like, yeah, all right, whatever.
Anyway, I'm now going to read you an actual review.
Okay.
Now, this is a lot longer than the reviews I usually read.
Okay.
But I think it will give us something interesting to talk about.
Okay.
It's also not funny. It's more an actual serious criticism.
Okay.
So this is a 2 out of 10 star review on IMDb.
Not positive then.
With the title, confirms the worst of what people think of Boll. When I heard that Uwe Boll had challenged several of his critics to a boxing match, I thought it was an example of the man failing to understand reactions. Rather than come out looking like a misunderstood hero, he comes off as a spoiled child. So when I hear people calling Uwe the new Ed Wood, I just want to point out that this demonstrates ignorance regarding Wood. It is insulting to the poor guy. You see, Wood made one of the most daring, if staggeringly inept, films that challenged people's perceptions of transvestitism and gender roles, long before this became a common theme in Hollywood. His major feature was that he lived only to make films, and did so because of motivations other than cash. Boll, on the other hand, says absolutely nothing in his films that is of any value, and has shown himself in the media to be the most cynical, thoughtless idiot that ever drew breath.
Can I make a one comment on that? Uwe Boll seriously believes that Postal is an important film. He's most important, but also he's most important because it is culturally important as far as he's concerned.
Yeah.
So there is at least one film that Uwe Boll considers culturally relevant.
Another classic example of the difference between Boll and Wood, perfectly illustrated by Blood Rain, is that Wood's films make narrative sense. If you have not played any of the video games upon which Blood Rain is based, then it will make very little sense to you. The parts about Rain being the child of a vampire and a human I get, but the film is loaded with references to artifacts that the villain needs in order to gain power, which Rain must obviously stop him from acquiring. This reminds me of the sequence from Bakshi's adaptation of The Lord of the Rings, in which the explanation of what the One Ring is and what it does was meant to be delivered. By failing to deliver this critical information in a manner that makes sense to the viewer, both films end up disjointed and pointless. Only Blood Rain makes it much, much worse by jumping around from location to location, showing confrontations between Rain and various enemies without a pause for explanation as to why it's significant. $10 to anyone who can figure out exactly why Boll chose to end the film with a bunch of flashbacks to disjointed events that have no connection to the film's present time, when the climactic slaying would have done just fine. Did he do that? I don't remember the flashbacks.
The flashbacks were the rape.
At the end, though.
Were there flashbacks at the end?
I don't remember them.
I don't remember there being flashbacks at the end.
No, unless we forgot them already. I will say,
they were obviously
though,
very relevant.
Further on that point, we did say, didn't we, there's a bit in sort of the first quarter of the film where she walks into a room and there's just a big-ass monster with a mallet for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
It's never explained.
And you're like, that's a boss fight.
And you're like, that's just so there was a boss fight. But we get no explanation of what that creature is.
But also, she kills that creature, even though...
And it's never mentioned again.
No, because she gets invited into that monastery by the monk, and Udo Kier, one of the other monks who also doesn't want to be there, tells her that she can't have this object because the object is being guarded by his monk tribe and monastery. And she goes and gets it anyway, kills the guy who's meant to be sitting watch, and then no one gives a shit. And it's like, they just killed Derek. Like, does no one care about poor Derek?
Yeah.
Never mind.
So continuing the review. Another of Boll's few talents is to classically miscast. Christina Loken is surprisingly good as the titular character and puts in a far better performance than I would have credited her with after that abysmal Terminator ripoff. It is certainly
Terminator
far better...
Ripoff. Oh, not a fan of Terminator 3,
no.
though.
It is certainly far better than the film deserves. Michelle Rodriguez looks extremely angry to be there. Matthew Davis has this stupid expression on his face all the time that appears to be him begging for some direction.
Yeah.
Michael Madsen, Billy Zane and Udo Kier are literally on autopilot, but Meatloaf, the poor guy, seems to actually be trying to take his role seriously, and never have I seen an actor look so uncomfortable in his work. He almost looks as if he's going to have a stroke from all the what the hell am I doing here hear instructions his brain is trying to process. But the real gem here is Ben Kingsley, winner of one Academy Award and nominee for three others, who seriously looks as if he's going to burst out into laughter at any second during his scenes with Loken. And honestly, who could blame him?
I didn't think he was laughing.
There was one bit where I think I saw him start to crack a smile at the end of one of his lines.
Right.
And I was a bit like, hey, he nearly broke. A mention must be made to the abysmal special effects here too. Boll at least knows that the audience for a film based on a video game expects to see blood and lots of it. However, like every other aspect of his films, the delivery is so staggeringly inept that it makes one wonder how Boll can be so blind to this. Not only does the head of one opponent look despicably fake, the looks on the faces of the extras when they are shown chopping things up with their swords is utterly hilarious. We spoke about the actor when Blood Rain first, she saves like a travelling... carriage, doesn't she?
Yeah,
from a vampire attack. And the little girl's watching her maul these vampires to death, just like,
please don't hurt us.
Mm.
And you're like, she's murdering people in front of you.
Yeah. Someone had to direct them to assume that expression, as swinging an actual sword hard enough to sever a limb involves enough exertion that one at least pulls some kind of face in the process. They said it best in Showdown in Little Tokyo, beheadings are not as easy as they look. Yet Boll seems to think he can silence individuals who feel he is utterly inept as a director by hitting them. If I could say one thing to his face right now, it would be that keeping silent and working on making a genuinely good film would have worked a lot more. So I mean it when I say this film is not as bad as many others have said. It's worse. A competent director like Wolfgang Peterson would have connected the story together properly and at least shot the violence in a convincing fashion. A brilliant director such as Paul Verhoeven would have found a way to satirise the social mores of the 18th century and delivered enough convincing violence to give the MPAA fits at the same time. As much as Boll would like to pretend otherwise on the basis of sales figures in I actually can't read that, that's racist as shit. Boll would like us to believe that he is some kind of misunderstood genius who keeps striking out with critics because they don't understand his message. Well, Boll, the disjointed plot aside, I understand you just fine. The thing is, when I do understand your films, I don't want them anymore. So I gave Blood Rain a 2 out of 10. A 1 would only further its position on the bottom 100, and it's deserving of infamy in neither sense of the word. Avoid. So it's so bad they didn't give it a 1 because they don't want it to get attention for being one of the worst films ever made.
Jeez.
That's bad. Like, you know someone hates a film when they hate it that much.
Yeah.
I wish I could sit here and say, bear in mind I'm trying to be nicer to directors now,
but Uwe Boll, sure I think we can make an exception for.
I'm not sure I can find anything in there that I can argue with.
No. No, it all comes through on screen as well. It's not like you can go, you know what, at least he gets the job done, because he doesn't. He just doesn't.
I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Yep.
Short of a complete revamp, like literally back to the drawing board revamp, is there any way of saving this movie? I don't think there is, without literally going back to the script level, because for the love of God, they did a first draft.
Wait. They weren't using the first draft. So if you were to go back to the first draft, that may even be in and of itself be better, because it won't be Uwe Boll's script. Number one, you replace the director. Uwe Boll cannot make.
Oh, that's a given. Uwe Boll's gone.
So Uwe Boll's gone, and you put in literally anyone else. Ben Kingsley, if he's not interested, needs to get shot of, because, quite honestly, he's the worst thing in it.
Yeah.
He's the worst bit of acting I've seen in almost any movie.
I'm sorry. It is bad. It's very bad, but come on, it's not Bob Roo.
I believe Bob Roo more than I believe Ben Kingsley.
No,
in this film.
You don't.
Honestly, I do. No, Jamie, honestly, his acting in this is the worst I've ever seen anyone act in any film.
No, it's not. You're being exaggerated.
I'm not. I'm genuinely not, Jamie.
I know it's not, because you've seen films at Horror on Sea with me. So I know.
Honestly, Jamie.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's that level, if not worse.
That's just it. We can meet anyone, we can go anywhere. I get what I want when I want it. And you know, I always win.
I should thank you now that Brimstone is eradicated and you have so kindly handed me the heart. I would never have believed it would have been so easy. If you live through this, which is unlikely, you may remain here in my castle.
I would sooner rot in your dungeon than sit at your table.
So be it.
Ben Kingsley's performance in this is that bad.
It's very bad. It is very bad. But it's not the worst I've ever seen.
I think you're being too kind.
I at least could understand all of his dialogue. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, fair point. He is clear.
I have seen performances before where they're literally just mumbling everything.
No, fair enough. I'll put him. But Bob Rue actually put some more effort. He's a shitter actor in general. Don't get me wrong. Like Ben Kingsley's a phenomenal actor. Yeah.
I think when he tries. Yeah. I think if you had a better script, Ben Kingsley wouldn't be on autopilot like he is.
Yeah.
He's
not even on autopilot. I honestly think he's purposely destroying the project. You see Billy Zane is on autopilot. You see Michael Madsen is on autopilot.
Ben Kingsley's being actively bad, isn't he?
Yeah. He's putting effort into being as bad as possible.
I do feel, and again, obviously I don't know because I don't know Ben Kingsley. I get a feeling, though, that you would fix that problem immediately by doing your other suggestion, which is getting rid of Uwe.
Yeah.
I honestly think, because he said in that interview that he really wanted to play a vampire. I reckon he turned up on set, met Uwe Boll, who, again, fair play, I've never met Uwe Boll, but from everything I have heard about him, sounds like one of the most detestable human beings on the planet.
Yeah, I can imagine Ben Kingsley and Uwe Boll aren't best buds.
Yeah, and I can imagine Ben Kingsley basically went, oh, you're a dick.
Yeah, I'm
going to ruin your film. Here's what I'll do instead. Rather than asking such a vague question, I'm going to ask you some direct questions.
Yes.
So assuming, let's assume you have, okay, actually, first question, pick a different director.
Okay. Something that would do this level, because let's be honest, like, you're not going to get top quality director.
Mm.
Paul W.S. Anderson would do a better job if you're looking for lowbrow.
Mm.
If you're looking for...
Yeah, but then Blood Rain would be played by Milla Jovovich, and we don't want that.
Yeah, yeah. To be honest, though, the person who did Van Helsing...
Stephen Sommers.
Yeah, I reckon he would have done a better job.
Yeah, he works with bigger budgets than this, or at least he was at that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, Stephen Sommers would do a better job with this.
Honestly, I think, because I wasn't a big fan of Van Helsing as a film, but I didn't think the direction was bad.
But you liked The Mummy, didn't you? Because he did The Mummy as well, Brendan Fraser one.
Yeah, so I think he's a good choice, because he's not A-list as such, but he's not shit.
Yeah, okay. So you've got a new director. Are you keeping Kristanna Loken as Blood Rain?
I don't think she does a bad job. I think, yeah.
Yeah, keep Kristanna Loken. Are we going to jettison Michael Madsen?
Yes. Because he can't do an accent.
Yeah. Who would you have in the Michael Madsen role?
Well, nowadays it'd be Mads Mikkelsen, honestly. I know it sounds silly because I made a joke about Michael Madsen and Mads Mikkelsen doing a film together. Just as confusing namesake. But honestly, like, Mads Mikkelsen would be... Because he does like to do all the sword fighting shit in indie movies. So he'd actually be quite a good choice. Alternatively, I mean, really, like, almost anyone who has some sword fighting experience, like, even if they're not racially correct, someone like Antonio Banderas, because he's at least, you could pull off that he's European and he's got experience by this point from things like The 13th Warrior. Because that's the other thing, like, Antonio Banderas being Vladimir wouldn't work either.
Assuming we're still going with a cheesy action-type film, and we're not trying to actually be serious, because obviously...
You want an actor with personality.
Yeah.
Immediate personality.
What about Dolph Lundgren?
Yes. In fact, Dolph Lundgren is in the second In the Name of the King film. So
he has worked with Uwe before.
He has, yeah. Well, after this, actually, but...
To be fair, I can imagine Dolph Lundgren's the only actor Uwe Boll probably didn't cause any shit with. Because Dolph Lundgren would kick the living shit out of
him. You don't fuck with Dolph Lundgren. Dolph Lundgren at this time would probably be a good shout.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Big, tall... I mean, to be fair, just don't call him Vladimir. Make him a big Viking motherfucker.
I'm going to assume that Vladimir has to be the name because it's in the game, but I've not played the game. So
as Paul Anderson has proven to us, that don't mean shit.
I'm going to try and keep what I assume is that game accurate in this film.
There ain't one thing in that first Resident Evil film except the words T-Virus and Umbrella that relates to the game.
And the train, which was so spot on that they got the name on it wrong.
Yeah.
I've got to keep the associate producer.
Yeah. Max Wanko.
Max Wanko.
Don't mock someone for their name.
I'm not. It's just the best name I've seen in film, Jamie.
Let's say we're jettisoning Ben Kingsley.
Yep.
because he's decided Uwe Boll was the only reason he wanted to make the film, and now we've got rid of Uwe Boll, he don't want to do it anymore.
Yep.
Who could you see being the villain?
Man,
instead?
I would always go Raul Julia, but he would have been dead by this point anyway, sadly. I mean, quite honestly, someone like, though probably a bit too big to do it at the time, but you'd want someone who has that kind of gothic sexiness anyway. So I'd probably
Alan Rickman?
You could do Alan Rickman, but I was thinking...
I'm literally just picturing him as Snape, though.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking more Johnny Depp.
Yes.
Because he wasn't too young at this point.
I don't know, a little too young. I mean, he's nowhere near Ben Kingsley's age.
But also, he is a vampire.
But he is a vampire, so you could get away with it. I don't know. For me, he's too in his Captain Jack Sparrow era at this time.
Yeah, but that'd be another way it sells.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest,
it would sell more if it was Johnny Depp.
Ben Kingsley's role is very small in this film. I mean, like, other than the sword fight at the end, it's pretty much all shot in a day.
See, I'd go more Mads Mikkelsen for that role than for the Vladimir role. Actually, no. Do you know who I'd go for? It's a lazy answer, but lately it's become my answer for everything when it's a villain character.
Go on.
Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. Willem Dafoe would be good. Yeah. I'm not sure about the accent, though. That's the only thing that I'd question is
just
the accent.
Just literally do him up exactly like he was when he did, is it Shadow of the Vampire? Where he plays the guy who played
Tom
Nosferatu.
Oh, yes.
Shadow of the Vampire.
I think that is Shadow of the Vampire.
Yeah,
actually,
you're thinking of
Interview
with the Vampire.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Literally, just dress him up as his Shadow of the Vampire character,
yeah,
and just have him play Nosferatu again.
He plays another Max Schreck.
Mm, yeah.
Not Max Wanko.
No.
Which isn't funny.
No, it's not.
Max Wanko isn't funny. It's
about as funny as Rory Jocelyn.
No. No, yeah.
What are you jostling for? Jostling down the street?
I'm jostling for a Wanko.
Jostling at a party?
Give me the Michael Madsen face.
I always want to sing...
Yes, there it is.
I always want to sing Jocelyn to the tune of Jolene, but it doesn't quite fit, does it?
Jocelyn.
Anyway, okay, I think I know the answer to this next question as well. Rorschach, would you recommend this film to our viewers/listeners?
Yes.
No, you wouldn't. Stop lying.
I've got to, because it's produced by Max Wanko, which isn't funny.
It's not.
It's not funny.
Go on.
No, I wouldn't. I can't. Here's the thing. This is a better film than its sequel. I will give it that praise.
Oh, how bad could the sequel be then?
Well, this sounds really nasty, but Kristanna Loken is at least a serviceable actor and Natasha Mouthay is much less so.
Fuck me.
The Blood Rain character is the only one that continues over, and it doesn't make sense. Cause...
I mean, to be fair, because everyone's fucking dead at the end of this first one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she's the only one who carries over, different actress, and it's all set in the Wild West.
Oh, I remember you telling me about this. Yeah,
and
yeah,
then
we'll
the third one is where she fights the Nazis. It's called the Third Reich.
So she jumps forward in time? I guess she's... Because she's a damn thing, I guess she ages...
Doesn't, I don't know.
Slower than other people.
So the
I'm
second
guessing.
One, I haven't seen the third one. The second one, she is trying to kill Billy the Kid because Billy the Kid's a vampire. Doesn't explain why, he just always has been, apparently. Cool. So he's a European guy because, as we all know, Billy the Kid was famously a European vampire, Eastern European as well. And then the third one, yeah, it's just called the Third Reich, and all I've seen is the poster, which is her with a sword slaying zombie Nazis.
Cool.
Yeah. This is a better film than the second one. I'll give it that. It is also a better film than Uwe Boll's Alone in the Dark. It's less enjoyable, but probably in some ways a better film than Postal. I technically think this is a slightly better film than House of the Dead, but House of the Dead has a slightly better colour palette, and I know that you think differently.
House of the Dead, I can't believe I'm saying this, but at least the plot fit, like the plot made sense. It was stupid. It was a stupid plot.
What was the quote? Why do you want infinite life?
To live forever. Immortality. Why do you want immortality? To live forever. Anyway, you'll not be surprised at all to learn that I doth not recommend this movie.
Okay.
This is not Uwe Boll's victory. I think this round goes to us. I would like to think over the course of VGMP that we might eventually find one movie where Uwe Boll hasn't utterly disappointed us.
In the Name of the King is our closest shot to my knowledge.
Sorry, Uwe. I am not on your side with this one.
Ooh, he's going to have to take you out in the ring.
In the cage match. Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Do you think there's a chance of any worse lines in this? They were all fucking awful, yeah. I actually don't know.
What would his finishing move be? The bowl bomb?
The bollocks.
Bowl buster.
The bowl
buster.
It'd
be the bowl buster, yeah, wouldn't it?
It would.
And it'd just be a full-on punch to the nuts.
Yeah.
Bagout!
Bagout, he did the bowl buster.
Steel chair into a bowl buster.
And it's still more fun than watching his films.
Yeah, yeah, it is. They all caught syphilis from those Romanian prostitutes, by God. Imagine hiring prostitutes.
To be fair, Jamie, to be fair, that not only are they cheaper than actresses.
It's cost effective, you're right. Yeah,
but they're also cleaner than Uwe Boll.
You just know.
He's a greb.
You know he thought he was so fucking edgy when he did that.
Yeah.
I bet he didn't tell the actors. I bet they all turned up to set and he probably waited until they were two or three takes in. So everyone's naked. Meatloaf's already
pinched.
And he's
like, do you want a top on or something? I know it's cold between takes. And he's like, don't worry about them. They're all the prostitutes.
Yeah. Guys, guess what? Guess what I did? Yeah, naughty Uwe. Guess what naughty Uwe did?
Uwe's been the bad boy.
By the way, naughty Uwe is going to become a recurring character. Guess what naughty Uwe did? Such a bad boy.
Naughty Uwe has to be a recurring character now. I love naughty Uwe.
Naughty Uwe hired prostitutes. Right, Meatloaf, you're in bed with the hookers.
And their payment was in Nazi gold.
You remember when Meatloaf said he would do anything for love, but he won't do that?
Yep.
That should have been an Uwe Boll film. I would do anything for love, but I won't do blood rain.
Oh, man. I think that's pretty much everything for Blood Rain.
Yeah, I ain't got nothing else to say.
No, it's
we live to fight Uwe another day.
Yeah.
Naughty, naughty Uwe.
So yeah, that's three. It's three us, nil to Uwe so far.
How many more to go? And he done like 12 or something.
I think he's done 10.
10. Or an even 10. He's the Tarantino of video games.
I know
films.
He's the one with the most under his belt.
In Paul Anderson, like one behind him.
Yeah. Paul Anderson is catching up the rear. Uwe Boll has stopped making films. Whereas
No. Uwe Boll has been stopped.
So Paul W.S. Anderson's latest one was Monster Hunter in 2020. I know there's a sequel, I believe, that's being prepared and underway.
No, there's not. Shut up. No one watched that film.
Well, that's what I've heard. I might be wrong. And the last one from Uwe Boll was 2014. So
really? It's that long ago?
Yeah, that was in The Name of King 3.
Okay, well, that's all we've got to say about Blood Rain. Have you guys seen Blood Rain? Have you had that misfortune? If you have, feel free to contact us and let us know what you thought at info.impalafilms@gmail.com or go to our Discord. You can find the link on our website. Tell us what you think the best Uwe Boll film is.
Yes.
That's a tough contender. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please do like, share, subscribe, etc. All the usual bullshit that people on the internet ask you to do, but it really does help. And we will see you for our next episode, which will be, Rory,
the next film, you lucky bastards, is Bobsy. The
Bobcat.
Yes, the unsuccessful TV pilot. That's our DLC. Our next main one is Captain N the Game Master.
Delightful. Well, there you have it, folks. Bubsy and Captain N, the Game Master. The N stands for Nintendo, you dirty, dirty boys.
Not for Uwe Boll.
you naughty, naughty Uwe. And we will see you next time on VGMP, the Video Game Movie Podcast. Game over, yeah!
Cyberpunk Studios.